Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is the Dogs Program. The Australian Council for Defence of Government Schools are here every Saturday at 12 noon on the dot to defend and to promote public education. And I'm coming to the conclusion that we're needed more than ever before. And we're not alone. There are other organisations now in behind us. There is the Save Our Schools group in Canberra, and of course there's the Teachers' Federations around Australia and the Australian Education Union. But we're a little bit more perhaps extreme than they are, because we don't think that private schools should get a penny of public money, whereas most other groups seem to think that it's a fait accompli. The real problem is, of course, that if you give money to private schools, particularly if they're religious schools, then you're back in the 18th century, early 19th century, with the denominational system. And you've got problems with the sectarian, staring wars, which have gone on for centuries. And we can do without them. We really can do without them, because education is about our children and their future, not the past sectarian problems. But it's very difficult to escape from history, unfortunately. But the dogs are determined to do that. We're prepared to fight for the bad parts, for the good parts of history, not the bad parts of history, for our children's sake. Now, we have a website at www.adogs.info, and we have a press release, 1077. And this is about private schools and their building fund tax perks. It's a very interesting one, because this whole program is going to be relating to the difference between the private school infrastructure and that in our public schools at the moment. The private schools get loads of money from Canberra for infrastructure, and the public schools have to depend upon the treasuries of the state governments, which are much, much smaller than that in Canberra. Anyway, let's hear it, shall we? Over to Andy.
Thanks, Jean. And this is the Australian Council for the Defence of Government Schools press release number 1077. Private schools and their building fund tax perks. Private schools are enjoying an infrastructure bonanza, while public schools go begging for basic facilities, and even prestigious selective schools like Melbourne High are crumbling. The answer lies not only in direct funding inequities, but in the tax system. For private schools are, the mind boggles, charities. In 2023, it looked as if some of the nation's wealthiest private schools could lose their ability to raise multi-million dollar building funds as part of mooted changes to tax deductibility rules for charitable donations. Schools including Sydney's Shaw, Kambala and Skeggs Darlinghurst, as well as Scotch, Xavier and Wesley in Melbourne, would have been among the losers from Productivity Commission recommendations for changes to exclude some education-related activities from deductible gift recipient rules. The proposal. The Productivity Commission suggested removing tax deductions for school building funds. The Commission stated that these funds did not offer a wide community benefit. They argued that wealthy donors could turn tax breaks into private benefits for high-fee schools. About 5,000 school building funds across Australia risked losing their special tax status. Under pressure, the Albanese government dropped the plan in July 2024. The result, so-called independent and private schools continue to receive millions of dollars in tax-free donations for new buildings. According to Marna True, the education correspondent for the Financial Review on the 30th of August, 10 of the country's most exclusive private schools collectively raised more than $70 million from donations and bequests last year, driven by ambitious funding campaigns targeting parents and alumni to bankroll 12-lane swimming pools and library upgrades. The list of benefactors playing the tax system on behalf of the country's wealthiest private schools lifts the curtain on the resources being pumped into the educational facilities for the sons and daughters of Australian oligarchs. Hobart's The Hutchins School tops the list of reported revenue from donations at $11,990,968 in a leadership board dominated by New South Wales and Victorian institutions. But that figure includes major payments made to the building fund in earlier years, which were brought into the school's account in 2025 to facilitate the construction of the NJ Edwards Hub, a mammoth gymnasium which will include basketball courts, an indoor swimming pool, and weights and cardio facilities. The school's annual giving report puts the total value of donations last year at $1.88 million, the majority of which will go towards infrastructure. Moriah College, a Jewish school in Sydney's east, reported almost $11 million in revenue from donations last year via its foundation, which led a fundraising drive for a new building. The organisation is listed as funding infrastructure works and innovative programs for students, as well as scholarships and bursaries. The Scots College, which is currently at the centre of a firestorm over sexual assault allegations concerning three of its students, reported almost $9 million in revenue from donations. The Scots College Foundation, which includes a building and scholarship fund for the school, separately posted almost $6.9 million. Among the school's prominent recent donors is Servcorp founder Alf Mufarij, who contributed $1 million or more towards funding the school's new open-air aquatic facility, which has been budgeted to cost $15 million. Two-thirds of the 25-metre outdoor pool, due to be completed by next year, will be funded by donors, who can buy naming rights for the grandstand, scoreboard, swimming lanes and water polo goals. The Bellevue Hill School is also fundraising for two dormitories, estimated to cost about $20 million each. One donor gave $2.7 million towards the Bannockburn Dormitory Project, according to the school's giving report. Sarah and Lachlan Murdoch, the parents of former students, are listed as donating $100,000 or more. Alan Ridge, chairman of Cinema, Hotel and Ski Resort Group EVT, is reported as the largest donor so far to the Glengarry Dormitory Project after giving $500,000 or more. An earlier $5 million donation by the Murdochs funded the establishment of a scholarship in Principal Ian Lambert's name last year, the school said. Businessman Charles Kiefel and luxury real estate agent Brad Pillinger also have new scholarships in their names. Xavier College, one of Melbourne's oldest schools, brought in $6,726,000, while Melbourne Girls Grammar reported $6,411,946, including $4.93 million in bequests. Newington College in Sydney's inner west, Barker College in the northwest, and Cranbrook in the city's east all reported donation revenue upwards of $5.5 million last year, according to the charity's disclosure. Newington's donation haul was up 177% on the previous year, according to the school's giving report, with the $4.3 million going towards building projects, including a new dining hall at the school's Yungay Creek campus on the New South Wales north coast. Barker College almost doubled its 2025 Giving Day goal, raising more than $833,000 from almost 1,000 donors, including $20,000 from Dick and Pip Smith, according to the fundraising page. At the newly co-ed Cranbrook overlooking Sydney Harbour, donors can secure a plaque on a seat at the basketball courts, theatre or aquatic centre for a donation of $10,000 or more to the building fund as part of the Take Your Seat campaign. Geelong Grammar School, which reported donations of $4,737,000 last year, began a $5 million renovation of the library and outdoor education store at its Timbertop campus in Victoria's High Country, made famous by King Charles' two-term stint there in 1966. The project has received $2 million in donations, each from media scion John B. Fairfax and philanthropist Andrew Ferran, both alumni of the school, which boasts the most expensive fees in the country. Melbourne Grammar School reported $4,374,625 from donations. In 2025, at least 14 schools reported donations and bequests revenue higher than $3 million, all but one in New South Wales and Victoria. That tally includes the Melbourne Indigenous Transition School in Richmond, which caters to students from regional and remote communities in the top end and throughout Victoria. The Productivity Commission has called for school building funds to be excluded from the tax perks. A 2024 Commission report found school or college building funds were the second largest category of entities eligible for tax deductions, behind public benevolent institutions. Some non-government schools can access infrastructure funding through the government's capital grants program, but this is distributed on a needs basis, meaning high fee schools are typically excluded. Private school fees across the country increased on average 7% this year, according to analysis by the Australian Financial Review, pushing the cost of enrolling a Year 12 student above the $50,000 at a handful of prestigious institutions. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much for that information, Andy, and also thank you for the people who have been doing the research in this area over the last 3 or 4 years. The Productivity Commission could see that this was an unfair tax perk, but the Albanese government, as we know, haven't got the wherewithal or the courage to take on the private sector at the moment anyway. Of course, the private sector are doing so well because back in the day, the DLP was causing trouble and has caused trouble with the Labor Party. But it's very interesting. The dogs find it very interesting to see how these reformers, who in fact are members of the old DLP, if you look at them carefully, are now causing so much trouble in the Liberal Party. But let's go to what the Australian Education Union are about. They are about the infrastructure in the public schools, which has fallen right behind that of the private schools because of where the funding's coming from. The dollars are in Canberra. The dollars are not in the state treasuries. The state treasuries get about 15% of the total tax take of Australia, whereas the federal government gets over 80%. And you'll find that the rest goes to the councils. So the big money is in Canberra, and that's where the private schools have got their cotton-picking fingers. But the AAU are trying at least to talk about this problem. Let's hear about their infrastructure inquiry, shall we?
Thanks, Jean. Infrastructure inquiry reveals must-haves for schools. You can be assured one of our priority recommendations will be the essential nature of co-design with teachers and community. Schools for Our Future Infrastructure Inquiry Chair, Sharon Burrow, told the annual conference of the New South Wales Teachers Federation. There is no doubt that where principals, teachers, specialist staff, Indigenous communities, parents and allied health professionals are involved, new builds and retrofits are much more suitable for maximising the benefits and the enjoyment of schooling. The Australian Education Union's inquiry is investigating the importance of infrastructure, the condition and safety of public school facilities, future needs, equity, inclusion, and funding. The panel will publish its report by October. The inquiry has consulted with public school teachers, principals, education support personnel and families, state and territory governments and key departments of education personnel, education stakeholders, including unions, community organisations, researchers and youth bodies, organisations representing Aboriginal peoples and Torres Strait Islander peoples, rural and remote Australians, young people experiencing disadvantage and students with disability. Ms. Burrows said the complexities of teaching and learning, the scope of curriculum offering, student needs, health and wellbeing support, community building and community access and support requires fit-for-purpose infrastructure. She said the inquiry's nationwide consultations have revealed a broad set of must-have consideration. 1. Space. Generous, flexible classrooms with the ability to accommodate all teaching and learning choices, including breakout rooms with line of sight and dedicated spaces to enable the full scope of curriculum offerings. 2. Light, natural light, light and colour choices that support sensory well-being. 3. Sound. Acoustics and soundproofing to maximise concentration and minimise disruptions. 4. Full service. there is increasing support from Teachers for Wellbeing Hubs with capacity for specialist services to provide student and community support. 5. Early childhood. On-site provision is seen to support both student learning and parental choice. 6. Before and after school care facilities. Support for parents and students that doesn't compromise learning spaces. 7. School community meeting spaces. The need for halls, covered spaces that accommodate school students and the community to engage in and celebrate all school activities is vital. 8. Pride of place. Culture and community embedded in school art and design. 9. Beyond indoor spaces. Environment as a third teacher. Trees, covered outdoor spaces and playgrounds. 10. Sustainability. Electrification with renewable energy, water tanks, insulation, double glazing and reliable heating and cooling. And 11. Toilets. Inquiries to Deputy Chair Murray Mulheron encouraged members and schools to write submissions outlining how well current facilities are meeting the needs of students, teachers and staff, and what is required to ensure our schools are safe, modern, inclusive and fit for purpose into the future. We're not looking for essays, just a page and a half and photos, Mr. Mulheron said. The stories will help build an evidence base for future campaigning for recurrent federal capital works funding. At present, there is no ongoing federal infrastructure funding for public schools, while private schools receive extensive federal funding. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much. That's a very interesting. The AU are at least trying to get their facts and figures about what's going on with infrastructure. But as we know, the private school are never satisfied. They get 80% from their running costs and also infrastructure from the federal government, whereas the public schools only get about 20% if they're lucky. But they're not satisfied with their 80%. They want a bit more. And the AEU has got out a very interesting press release. They're saying that public funding should support public education, not overfunded private schools. Well, the Dogs, of course, should say public funding should only support public education, not private education. We shouldn't call it private anymore, actually. It's publicly funded education. Anyway, let's hear from Dale on this one.
Thanks, Jean. This is an AEU press release in response to Independent School Australia, or the ISA, and their press release addressing SRS, government funding, and school choice. Public funding should support public education, not overfunded private schools. The AEU rejects Independent Schools Australia, ISA, attempt to frame the national debate on school funding, saying the real issue is not school choice, but inadequate funding of Australia's public schools. AEU Federal President Corinna Haythorpe said taxpayer funds for education must be directed where they deliver the greatest public benefit, public schools. The ISA's campaign ignores the growing inequity in Australia's education system, where many private schools continue to receive generous government funding while public schools remain under-resourced. Australia has one of the most inequitable school funding systems in the OECD. Many private schools receive millions of dollars in taxpayer funding while also collecting substantial fees, Ms. Haythorpe said. At the same time, public school teachers are working incredibly hard with limited resources to provide the education and support students need. Governments have a responsibility to ensure every child has access to high-quality public education, regardless of where they live or their family's income. That means prioritising investment in Australia's public schools. This call from ISA comes at a time when private schools are now publicly subsidised to a greater extent than ever before. Over the last decade, private schools in Australia have benefited from a number of special deals from the Commonwealth, including the $1.2 billion Choice and Affordability Fund, the $3.2 billion in overfunding through to 2029 to transition down to 100% of the Schooling Resource Standard, the SRS, and over $1.6 billion from the Commonwealth for capital works. The ISA itself says over 30% of private schools were overfunded by the Commonwealth in 2025. As of 2025, 857 schools have already transitioned to 80%, and there are 383 independent schools still above 80%. Of the schools funded above 80% in 2025, 73 of them are funded less than 81%. ISA says over 30% of private schools were overfunded by the Commonwealth in 2024, and more schools than 2023. As of 2024, there are 385 independent schools still above 80%, and 843 schools have already transitioned to 80%. The Productivity Commission's report on government services in 2026 showed growth in government funding to private schools from both the Commonwealth and states and territories has outpaced funding growth for public schools by 30.6% over the last decade. Commonwealth funding to private schools has increased by 43.2% in real terms on a per student basis over the decade from 2014 to 2024. Private schools received $17.96 billion in Commonwealth funding in 2023 to 24, 62% of all Commonwealth funding to schools. The true total recurrent funding per FTE student in government schools was $21,550 in 23-24, not the $26,140 as claimed by the ISA. These facts expose a deeply unfair school funding system, with government funding growth continuing to favour private schools over public schools despite rising student need, Ms. Haythorpe said. This inequity is particularly egregious when it comes to school capital infrastructure. The AEU's recent report, The Building Divide in Australian Schools, found private schools outspent public schools on capital infrastructure by $38 billion over the past decade, including $5.4 billion in 2023 alone. There is no current Commonwealth capital funding program for public schools. From 2017 to 25, the Commonwealth Non-Government School Capital Grants Program has provided $1.6 billion in Commonwealth funding to private schools. The average grant over these 9 years has been $1.034 million, and 1,546 private schools have received Commonwealth grants in this time. In 2026, the fund will provide $258 million to 181 private schools at an average of $1.42 million for each grant. The Commonwealth is planning a further $3 billion in grants to private schools through to 2034. Our Schools for Our Future inquiry has heard from teachers, principals, and communities across Australia who are doing extraordinary work in classrooms that are overcrowded, aging, or no longer fit for purpose, Ms. Haythorpe said. While some private schools are building literal castles, many public schools are waiting years for basic classroom upgrades, air conditioning, adequate toilets, or learning spaces that meet the needs of students. The Productivity Commission's report on government services in 2026 also showed private schools educate less than half the number of students from low socio-educational advantage background households than public schools do. 31.5% of students in public schools are from the lowest quartile of SEA compared to 13% 7.7% in private schools. Public schools are doing the heaviest lifting in our education system, yet governments continue to fund them as if all schools face the same challenges. That is not equitable, and it is not delivering the outcomes students deserve. That public responsibility should be reflected in government investment. The AEU recognises the Albanese historic investment to fully fund public schools, with $20 billion of Commonwealth funding going to public schools over the next decade. Ms Haythorpe said these better and fairer schools agreements were an important step toward ensuring public schools were fully funded. But governments must resist calls to divert scarce education funding away from the public system. The question is not whether families can choose a private school. The question is whether every child can rely on a strong, well-funded local public school, Ms. Haythorpe said. Public education is the foundation of Australia's education system. It deserves to be funded as the national priority, rather than taxpayer dollars continuing to subsidise already well-resourced private schools. Indeed. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much, Dale. And you know, there's plenty of facts and figures. They're not very pretty ones about the overpayment of public money to private schools and the underfunding of our public sector. We're certainly not living in the best of times. But let's have a break, shall we?
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a container deposit scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
You ready to make a difference? My name is Nelson Mashney. I host Palestine Remembered each Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. It's Australia's only dedicated radio show on Palestine. 3CR Community Radio is more than just a station. It's a platform for voices you won't hear anywhere else. And we need you. 3CR is an outlet that gives a voice to the voiceless. For 5 decades, 3CR has amplified the struggles, stories, and successes of marginalised and silenced communities. From First Nation voices to workers' rights and grassroots campaigns to global solidarity, this is where justice speaks. When you subscribe to 3CR, you're not just tuning in, you're taking a stand. You're supporting independent media that fights for truth, diversity, and equality. 3CR is powered by people like you. No ads, no corporate control, just raw, real radio created by the community for the community. So what are you waiting for? Show your solidarity today. Subscribe to 3CR and help us keep the airways free for voices that matter.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs, because there's been some very interesting articles in the last week about the public funding of public education. And Alison Pennington, very interesting writer, was a guest speaker at the New South Wales Teachers Federation Conference, but she's also been writing in the Saturday paper. The Dogs can recommend the Saturday paper. There's some very good journalists writing for it at the moment, and Alison Pennington is one of them. Let's hear from her ideas, shall we?
Thanks, Jean. Alison Pennington's idea for further government investment in public education spreads. The concept that the federal government needs to further support public education has again been championed by economist Alison Pennington. Writing in the Saturday paper on the 15th of August, Miss Pennington built on her speech delivered at Federation's recent annual conference. Although Labor's commitment to healthcare and education is undeniable, the public services can't be repaired while propping up private systems honed in the Howard era. The better off get a chance at healthier, happier lives, less friction with bureaucracy and more agency, while everyone else gets overcrowded, crumbling classrooms, emergency care only, waiting lists, safety nets, and the means testing quagmire, she writes in the Saturday paper. Private health and education expand their remit by diverting taxpayer funds away from quality public provision, weakening the political salience of public goods. Worst of all, the underserved fund the inequality that subjugates them. Donations to private schools to build Hogwarts castles and Olympic-sized swimming pools are tax-deductible, while no dedicated federal funding stream exists for public school infrastructure. This leaves an accumulated capital expenditure gap of $38 billion between private and public schools over the past decade. In response to Ms. Pennington's article, Federation President Henry Rajendra said that for decades, government spending in public school infrastructure has fallen behind. We know the majority of principals don't feel they can offer the full curriculum with the infrastructure they have and feel they lack the purpose-built infrastructure to support students with disability, Mr. Rajendra said. Half of all principals say the maintenance of their school buildings is inadequate, he added. Federation is supporting the Australian Education Union Schools for Our Future National Inquiry into Australia's public school infrastructure needs. The post-accord framework unleashed the ills of privatisation, wage stagnation and outsized corporate power, changing the economic and institutional fundamentals underpinning Australia's welfare state, Ms. Pennington also states in the Saturday paper. Saving our precious social democratic tradition requires the government to step in, take the reins, and act forcefully against unscrupulous private actors. She suggests that rather than relying on interest rate hikes to protect people from destabilising inflation, the government could take inspiration from countries such as Mexico and Spain, which have employed targeted price controls, subsidies, and strategic tax adjustments. In the long run, structural price stability is best achieved through public provision of essentials. The federal government should, using its lower borrowing costs and bargaining power in supply chains, prioritise direct public delivery in priority areas, she writes. Echoing her speech to Federation's annual conference, Ms. Pennington states, price stability means investing in our universal healthcare and education systems, weaning private parallel systems off the public teat, and redirecting those funds to Medicare, public schools and TAFE, including integrating early childhood education and care into the state's public education stack. She called for an honest conversation about ambitious, creative ways of taxing unearned wealth. Mr. Rajendra said Federation will continue to work closely with the broader union movement in pursuit of a fair economy for all workers, families and their communities. Back to you, Jean.
Well, that was very interesting, and those were the dulcet tones of Maddie. But now we've got a very interesting press release from the Independent Schools Union. It's always useful to know what the opposition are up to. And this is very interesting because it reveals that teachers in private schools often get more money than those in public schools. But of course, their salaries are tied to what the unions have been fighting for public education, for public teachers. So whenever the public teachers get a rise, the private school people want one too, but they don't have to fight for it, do they? But let's hear this very interesting story from Over Newton College. Dale's got it for us.
Thanks, Jean. This is an independent education union press release about a pay dispute at Over Newton College. IEU members at Over Newton Anglican Community College have rejected a pay deal they say risks eroding the college's historic wage differential, highlighting growing pressure on independent schools to match the significant wage increases won by AEU members in Victorian government education. Teachers and education support staff at the large, well-established school in Melbourne's northwest have overwhelmingly rejected a proposed 14% pay increase over 3 years, prompting the IEU to apply to the Fair Work Commission for a protected action ballot order. After the order was granted on the 18th of August, members were asked to authorise a range of protected industrial actions, including targeted work bans and limitations and stop work actions. Negotiation for a replacement agreement have been underway for more than 6 months, with the college making just one wage offer, 5% from February 2026 and 5% from February 2027 and 4% from February January 2028. Members say the issue is not simply the size of the pay increase, but whether OACC can continue to attract and retain experienced staff by offering wages and conditions that remain competitive across the Victorian education sector. Historically, OACC employees have been paid above comparable Victorian government school rates. Members are concerned the current proposal would erode that advantage following the endorsement of the Victorian Government Schools Agreement by the AEU members. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you very much, Dale. It just shows you how the private sector buy the teachers out of the public sector. And as we all know, there is a dearth of teachers in Australia at the moment. But the private schools are always there to do their best for our new oligarchy, aren't they? But let's, with Jeff, go over to the other countries. I think it's the Philippines today. We've got some very interesting international news for you.
Good afternoon, listeners. This week we're going to look at AI and its exponential growth or intrusion into education and the implications thereof. First, I'm just going to give you an overview from the Philippines. The Geneva Internet Platform, which is a Swiss-based digital online blog, has done an article on the Philippines. This one's from the 28th of August. And it is, the Philippines expands AI access for 1 million public school teachers. And the article says, more than 175,000 educators have registered for AI training as the Philippines expands Copilot use in public schools. The Philippines Department of Education and Microsoft have renewed a partnership that will give 1 million public school teachers access to Microsoft Copilot as part of the country's wider digital education program. The initiative is intended to support lesson planning, assessments, communication, administrative tasks, and the use of student data. It builds on an AI training program launched earlier in 2026 that registered more than 175,000 educators and drew nearly 75,000 participants to its main live training event. Teachers in the Philippines are being trained to use Copilot chat for tasks such as preparing curriculum-assigned lesson plans, drafting communications, summarising student progress and creating assessments. The program also includes guidance on responsible use with AI positioned as a support tool rather than a replacement for teachers' professional judgment. The partnership also covers Microsoft's Reading Progress and Reading Coach tools under the Department of Education's Academic Recovery and Accessible Learning program. A pilot involving 3,431 students across eight regions, analysed 8,381 reading submissions and trained more than 2,100 teachers. According to the program data, 780 reassessed students showed reading improvement during the 21-week pilot. Why does it matter? Giving 1 million public school teachers access to generative AI marks a major expansion of AI use in the Philippines' national education system. The initiative moves beyond small pilots and places AI tools directly into everyday teaching, lesson preparation, assessment, and administrative workflows. That's the end of that little digital note. And the incorporation of AI into education has been studied many times, but mostly with flawed research, according to Benjamin Riley. Now, this is the second article I'm going to do. It's from the 25th of August, 2026, and it's from the Build Cognitive Resonance Substack, and that's Benjamin Riley's personal Substack. And his article is from the 25th of August, as I said. The 50% problem, he calls it. Empirical evidence of the educational harm of generative AI. It begins. In 2024, Lawrence Holt of the XQ Institute published an essay titled The 5% Problem, a term that quickly became common parlance within the EdTech zeitgeist. Holt argued that when it comes to measuring the student learning outcomes of various EdTech programs, the results often only apply to the 5% of students who use the program as intended. The other 95% see minimal gains, if any. Holt's primary focus was on an online math program, and the central concern running through his essay involves whether and how students might get the recommended dosage of using various EdTech tools, Whether the problem arises from unmotivated students or unenthused teachers or disparate access to tech or some combination thereof, the challenge when framed this way is getting students to opt in to using a particular technology. Generative AI does not suffer from this problem. Uniquely, perhaps in the history of EdTech, AI has been broadly embraced by students worldwide so that the phrase AI is inevitable has become commonplace in the educational discourse. There are pockets of resistance, of course, and over the last 6 months we've seen mounting opposition to AI across multiple vectors, most prominently with data centres. Nonetheless, we know that students are using AI frequently. Dosage is not an issue. In the nearly 4 years of time that's passed since ChatGPT was commercially deployed, however, we have suffered from a lack of high-quality empirical research on the impact of students using generative AI. There are notable exceptions, but recent research out of Stanford indicated that out of more than 800 studies of AI in education, a mere 20 employed true causal measures. Causal measures. Meanwhile, at least one prominent meta-analysis purporting to show massive learning gains stemming from AI has been retracted, though not before being viewed 400,000 times. The field is a mess. Perhaps this is because studying AI in the real world poses serious challenges. We know that AI tools are free and widely available to students. We also know that many of them are using them after school hours for various purposes, including to help with their schoolwork. But quantifying this is very difficult because it's hard to peer into the home lives of children, and it's equally not, if not more challenging, to connect out-of-school behaviour to measurable learning outcomes. The data sets are not easy to link. Accordingly, research on AI's education impact has tended towards lab studies or small-scale evaluations. No longer. Last week, a study titled The Generative AI Learning Penalty, Evidence from Chinese Secondary Education, authored by David Stromberg, Victor Lay and Yanhui Wu, went viral after The Economist published data visualizations from the research paper. The preprint came out in June, not sure how I missed it, and uses data from approximately 27,000 students Chinese students in grades 7 to 12 to explore a straightforward question that has preoccupied me for several years. How does self-directed use of generative AI affect cumulative learning over time in an ordinary school? We'll get into the details shortly, but here's the headline summary of the results. Between 2023 and 2025, approximately 80% of all students started using generative AI. And after just 5 months of use, approximately 50% of these students engaged in full homework outsourcing, meaning they essentially stopped doing their homework independently and used AI instead. Over time, this caused significant learning loss, as measured both on monthly closed book exams and via the comprehensive high stakes exams that China uses to determine high school and college placement for students. On those tests, by the end of June 25, overall student performance fell by 24% on the former and 18% on the latter, a massive decline. What's more, there is no evidence, none, of any corresponding learning benefit arising from students using AI. As such, the researchers state plainly that our findings show that generative AI, which is likely to become a prevalent technology for education, has a substantial negative impact on student learning. Put simply, we now have rigorous empirical evidence on the real-world long-term impact of students using AI. This research indicates that AI substantially harms learning for half of all students, what the researchers call the generative AI penalty, and provides no discernible benefit to the other half. Again, by the time this study concluded, 50% of students using AI with regularity had fully outsourced their homework to generative AI. For these students, when at home, they just stop thinking about their schoolwork. I hereby dub this the 50% problem. Unlike the 5% problem, the 50% problem is a measure of harm stemming from widespread adoption of AI by students, rather than their failure to use this technology. It's my conservative estimate of how many students are being directly harmed by using these tools. As I've said repeatedly for several years, generative AI is a tool of cognitive automation. It's both predictable and tragic that students are learning less because of it. This new empirical research provides us with a clear measure of the degree of AI's educational harm. I will be abridging this article, I'll just say, but it's just a little bit more. Let's turn to the data itself. What it follows, we'll be looking at the performance of three different groups of students across three different learning activities. As to these students, we first have the baseline group of students results from the period prior to the introduction of generative AI. These students are labelled pre-AI and charted in green. There are charts and things on this article which are really quite enlightening. Next, we have the admirable group of students, all 19% of them, who do not use generative AI at any point between 23 and 25 when the study concluded. These are labelled never AI and charted in blue. Finally, we have the remaining 81% of students who adopted AI and used it for their schoolwork. These are labelled used AI and charted in red. Of note, these students did not start using AI at the same time. Adoption phased in over time, which allowed the researchers to uncover some interesting things that we won't go into here. As to the learning activities, we'll start by looking at the amount of time that students spent on their housework, on their homework, and researchers were able to track this because students had to log in online to download their homework and upload it upon completion. Then we'll look at how students scored on this same homework. Last but definitely not least, we'll examine how student performance changed on a monthly closed book exams, as well as China's very high stakes high school and college entrance exams. Both the underlying research paper and The Economist present helpful data visualizations. I'm going to abridge it all here, but bring you to the conclusion that those who did not use AI at all went up in their scores because the others went down so far that they became very much the top students. The ones who used AI had a massive drop in their performance. Essentially, in a closed book exam, the students just had not absorbed the information. I'm not going to read the whole article to you. I'm going to encourage you to have a look at it. It's available through the Network for Public Education, and it's also on the Build Cognitive Resonance Substack. And it's what many of us have suspected all along, which is students are letting the computers give the answers and they're not thinking about the problems and they're not taking them on board, they're not practicing them, and the cognitive absorption is reduced. With this, I will leave it you to think and ponder on the realm of AI and its growing encroachment in our world. In education, and I'm going to send you back to the headquarters, and I wish you all have a very nice weekend without robots. Cheerio.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, but let's have a break before we come back for our good news stories.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts.
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
All right, sis. You're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs program. Last weekend, I was up in the snow up at Mount Hotham. What snow there was. And I saw all these lovely children being taught how to ski. And then I found out that these lovely children came from a local P-12 school that has actually got a special school campus up there on the mountain, out there at Mount Hatna. Yes, a lovely, lovely idea, because a lot of the people up there depend upon the snow, of course, for their jobs and tourism. Let's hear about this great state school, shall we?
And this week's great state school of the week is Bright P-12 College. Bright P-12 College is a public school situated in Bright, Victoria, Australia. It has approximately 514 students and 60 staff. The principal is Jean Olley and the college council president is Peter Mack. The original school building was constructed in 1876. Bright P-12 College runs winter snow sports programs, including the Go to the Snow program and the Bright College Snow Sports Team, BCST, giving students access to skiing and snowboarding lessons at local alpine resorts. The program details. Go to the Snow, a 5-day program for students in years 3 to 10, held on Wednesdays during Term 3 at Falls Creek Ski Resort. Students get half-day recreational skiing and snowboarding and half-day professional lessons. Bright College Snow Sports Team, BCST, a 10-day program, 5 weekdays and 5 weekends for prep to Year 10 students at Mount Hotham Ski Resort. It features afternoon ski or snowboard lessons run in partnership with the Mount Hotham Ski School. Dinner Plain Campus features seasonal operations and mandatory cross-country ski lessons during Term 3. The BCST program requires new participants to be at least 5 years old, experienced enough to ride lifts, and able to descend a beginner green run unassisted. So it's not for absolute first timers. The principal's welcome. We welcome you and your child to our school. At Bright P-12 College, small class sizes mean big opportunities. Our students thrive in a supportive environment where well-being and learning have equal focus. We celebrate individuality, we foster connection, and we nurture growth. Set in the stunning alpine town of Bright, our school combines the charm of a country community with access to incredible learning experiences. Think mountain expeditions, science incursions, and language exchange programs. From prep to year 12, we offer a wide range of subject and specialist programs, including art, music, languages, outdoor education, robotics, psychology, and more. Teachers at Bright P-12 College come from a diverse range of backgrounds and choose to live in the area as they're passionate about the stunning environment and the amazing outdoor activities this part of the world has to offer. Our teachers include PhD-level academics, global educators, practicing artists, industry professionals, and community leaders. This combination of expertise and genuine care is rarely found in a single school, government or private, and is something we are very proud of. Our school spaces include dedicated science labs, expansive playing fields surrounded by natural bushland, purpose-built art rooms, a high-tech product design workshop, and a thriving sustainability program incorporating a productive kitchen garden which is managed by a dedicated team of staff and students, and cultivated by every student from prep to year 12. Beyond the classroom, our students have opportunities to engage with fundraising activities, welcome visitors from Germany and Japan, attend camps from nearby Harrietville to coastal Geelong, study astrophysics or sustainable technology through the Emerging Sciences Victoria Online Learning School, go skiing and snowboarding at Falls Creek and Mount Hotham, explore the world around them on geography field trips, represent our school at debating, sports and community events, go caving, abseiling, mountain biking, cross-country skiing and kayaking with their outdoor education class. Our school offers all the benefits of a small town community and all the advantages of opportunities for growth well beyond our gorgeous town. Our close ties to the local community, our focus on student well-being and our strong academic rigour make Bright P-12 College a truly special place to learn and grow. Come and see it for yourself. Book a tour. We'd love to show you around. And now some facts and figures from the My School website. Enrolment 514 and the ICSEA value slightly above average at 1,054. Representative of a diverse high country community. The upper 25% of socio-educational advantage makes up 24% of students. The second level, 30%. The third quartile of socio-educational advantage is 30% of students. And the lowest quartile of SEA, 16% of students, with 9% having a language background other than English and 0% Indigenous students. The finances are current grants from the Australian Government of $2.1 million and from the Victorian Government, $8.1 million. Private fees add an additional $380,000 odd, and other private contributions around $210,000. And that works out at $21,323 per student. The capital, $945,233 over 3 years. Back to you, Jean.
Well, congratulations to Bright Peter 12 College. What a lovely story that really is. And how our state schools cater for our children. They talk about educational relevance. So many of our regional state schools look at the curriculum and they make sure that their children are well educated for their regional peculiarities. And I think that's lovely.
Yes, it reminds me of when I was growing up in central Queensland and we lived closer to the coast. So our state school used to make marine biology a compulsory subject for all students until they got to choose electives. And the year 8s and year 9s all had an annual trip out to Middle Island to check out the Great Barrier Reef. And many of my fellow students ended up specialising in marine biology because of that initial start at school. It's an example of a regional great state school taking advantage of how unique that surrounding region is and inspiring kids to look at their region with excitement.
But our time's gone. Now we have a website at www.adogs.info. I have to thank our wonderful producer, Gail, and her offsider, Andy, and Maddie, and Jeff, of course. And we're looking forward to Sorrel coming back, but hope that she's having a wonderful time in the UK, where she's got a special job over there for the moment. But from all of us here at 3CR, it's bye for now.
I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe here last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died.
3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.